Trump says he doesn't need a vaccine to open the country. Governor Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio sound the alarm on a new syndrome affecting children as the region prepares its own ginger reopening. And will America's secret court get reined in by Congress? With these and other stories, I'm Paul DiRienzo with the news for Friday, May 15th, 2020. Ahmed Arbery may have stopped by a construction site for a drink of water before being killed while jogging. The 25-year-old Brunswick, Georgia man was videotaped entering an unoccupied construction site on separate occasions before being shot dead on February 23rd. Arbery's mother says her son was out for a jog when he was killed by a former police officer and his son, Gregory McMichael, 64, and Travis McMichael, 34. They were charged with the murder more than 2 months after Arbery's death when video of the shooting surfaced. In related news, the murder of Arbery has been dubbed Trayvon 2.0 after the 2012 killing of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin as he took a shortcut through a white community in Florida. The Georgia killing has prompted many sports stars and personalities to demand justice. 16-year-old tennis star Coco Gauff tweeted, "The violence needs to stop." NFL player Torrey Smith tweeted, "How do I explain what happened to Ahmed Arbery to my six-year-old son? Happy birthday to Ahmed Arbery." The New Orleans Saints safety Malcolm Jenkins said in a video he recorded during his run on Friday. Also, Tom Brady, formerly of the New England Patriots, Steve Kerr, NBA Golden State Warriors head coach, and Stan Van Gundy, former Detroit Pistons coach, signed a letter with 60 athletes to the U.S. Justice Department demanding a civil rights investigation of the Arbery killing. And five sailors on the U.S. aircraft carrier sidelined in Guam due to a COVID-19 outbreak have tested positive for the virus for a second time and have been taken off the ship. That's according to the Navy today. The resurgence of the virus in the five sailors on the USS Theodore Roosevelt underscores the befuddling behavior of the highly contagious virus and raises questions about how troops that test positive can be reintegrated into the military, particularly on board ships. All five sailors had previously tested positive and gone through at least 2 weeks of isolation. As part of the process, they all had to test negative twice in a row, with the test separated by at least a day or two before they were allowed to go back on the ship. Pentagon spokesman Jonathan Hoffman said the outbreak has been a learning process. And today, President Trump unveiled a team leading a federal effort that he hopes will produce a coronavirus vaccine by the end of the year. It's an accelerated timeline that has been met with skepticism from health experts. Trump described the project as a massive scientific, industrial, and logistical endeavor, unlike anything our country has seen since the Manhattan Project. But he said a vaccine isn't necessary to open up the country. That's against the advice of Dr. Anthony Fauci and other members of his own coronavirus task force.
I just want to make something clear. It's very important. Vaccine or no vaccine, we're back. And we're starting the process. And in many cases, they don't have vaccines, and a virus or a flu comes and you fight through it. We haven't seen anything like this in 100 and some odd years, 1917. But you fight through it, and people sometimes, I guess, we don't know exactly yet, but it looks like they become immune, or at least for a short while and maybe for life. But you fight through it. But what we'd like to do, if we can, is the vaccine.
The president said the administration was working to narrow down a group of potential vaccines from a set of 14 being developed to inoculate individuals against the coronavirus, which has infected more than 1.4 million Americans and led to more than 85,000 deaths in this country alone. Today is the day some parts of New York State can begin the process of opening up as the coronavirus pandemic in the state slowly comes under some sort of control. Governor Andrew Cuomo says it won't be easy.
We expect the rate to go up, but it has to go up at a rate that we can control, right? And the risk is the activity level increases quickly, and then the virus spreads quickly, you overwhelm the health system, etc. So this has to be monitored very closely.
The governor also announced that in coordination with several surrounding states, New York will be opening its beaches for the Memorial Day weekend, but with social distancing strictly enforced.
The agreement is New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Delaware will all be opening beaches for the Memorial Day weekend. States will have different specific rules about what happens on that beach. They'll all be plus or minus, but they're all basically in the same ballpark. They're opening Friday of Memorial Day weekend, state beaches. That includes local beaches, lake shores, It does not include pools. Pools are closed. But no more than 50% capacity. And that'll be done at parking areas, entrance areas, exit areas, etc. No group contact activities, no volleyball, no football, nothing like that. Areas of social gathering will be closed, picnic areas, etc., playgrounds, pavilions, arcades. Social distancing will be enforced for employees and for visitors. Masks must be worn by employees, and visitors must have masks and wear them when they can't socially distance. At this point, concessions will not be operating. We don't want long lines of people waiting on concessions for concession stands, and we'll ensure that staff levels are adequate to enforce these measures. Again, state beaches will be open on Friday before Memorial Day. Last point, reopening must be smart, and we have to keep this in focus.
But Mayor Bill de Blasio said in New York City, beachcombers will probably wait longer than Memorial Day weekend to take an ocean dip. De Blasio said there will be enhanced park patrols at city beaches to make sure New Yorkers don't try to swim without lifeguards on duty. And he spoke about the syndrome that's affecting at least 110 children in New York City that's been linked to the coronavirus exposure, mostly affecting Black and Latinx children. That's according to preliminary data released today. The number of affected children has doubled since Tuesday. The mayor said the results were sobering.
So here you see the age breakout. The number one category has been the youngest kids, 0 to 4. The next category in terms of percentage affected, 5 years old to 9 years old. The next category, 10 years old to 14 years old, and the category we've seen it the least in is 15 years old and up. So this is initial information, but we want people to see and be particularly vigilant with our youngest kids. We see, as we have seen with the coronavirus itself, more impact on males than females, and that is something that's still obviously being studied. The borough breakout here, the number one impact has been in the Bronx, followed by Queens and then Brooklyn, with much less in Manhattan and Staten Island. And then the ethnic racial breakout, which again is incomplete because almost 40% of this is still not classified, meaning kids that were still not getting the details. But so far, again, sobering, 24% African American, 14% Latino, 10% Asian, 9% white. Until we know more about the kids that are not yet identified, we can't give you a fuller picture. But again, very much concerned that this looks like it's tracking the same disparities we've seen throughout this crisis. And that is something we have to address very, very aggressively with everything we've got. Now, we are going to go at this with everything we have. But again, this case that we know so far, and this is always based on changing information, but we know early detection matters. We know if it's identified quickly, if a healthcare provider is alerted quickly, it can make all the difference in the world. And that is why, in so many cases, children have been saved and they can recover. But every family member out there, every parent, please, if you see those warning signs that we've been over, please, please, immediately reach out to a healthcare provider. And again, if you don't have one, call 311 and we'll connect you to a health and hospitals clinician.
While a disease which involves the circulatory system of children has been called Kawasaki disease, the World Health Organization is calling the affliction multi-symptom inflammatory syndrome in children. The WHO first announced the disease on April 30th. Governor Cuomo had this to say.
It is all across the state, but it's proportionate to population. And right now, it's 103 cases in New York. I'll tell you what I'm afraid of. It's not 103 cases in New York. It's just that we have seen it first. And it was deceptive the way it presented. Because COVID, they were all looking for respiratory illnesses. This is not a respiratory illness. This is an inflammation of the blood vessel. So it did not look or smell like a COVID case. When they went back and checked, the overwhelming number of children tested positive or had the antibodies, close to like 90% either were positive or had the antibodies. And I think you're going to be seeing more of this. There's stories about other illnesses that are popping up, and now they're saying this COVID virus does more damage in the body than we were aware of. But specifically with children, the reason I want this point abundantly clear, because this is not what we were told initially, and this is not what I told people initially. We were told it was primarily vulnerable people, and the good news is that children seem unaffected. And as a parent, that then gave me a false sense of security to now say, oh, we were wrong about that. You're talking about my child's health now and my child's life. I take this very seriously. And this is a big about-face, right? There was also an about-face. If you have the virus and you have the antibodies, you're immune and you can go back to work. Now, oh, maybe not. Maybe you're not immune. Maybe you're a little immune. Maybe we don't know. You know, these are dramatic shifts on this virus. And I don't fault anyone because it's a learning process, et cetera. But the more we learn, the worse it is. And the more we learn, it's only negative. We have not learned anything since this started that we say, oh, that was better than we thought.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, the director of the WHO's Emerging Infectious Disease Division is Dr. Maria von Kaikoff, an American doctor. She describes the syndrome.
This syndrome, we're calling it multi-system inflammatory syndrome, is a condition that was alerted to us from our colleagues in the United Kingdom two weeks ago. And it's a very rare condition which is causing an inflammatory disease in young children. What we've done with that information is that we've discussed this with our global clinical network, which is a group of clinicians across the world who are dealing with patients for COVID-19, and specifically talking with our pediatricians who are part of that global network. And in doing so, asking who has seen this in their countries, where they have seen it, how often they have seen it, what this syndrome actually looks like. And in doing so, raise the alert among this global network. We've heard of additional reports in a few countries, including the United States, including Italy. And so we're learning that it seems to be a very rare syndrome, but we need more information. And we need more information collected in a systematic way, because with the initial reports, we're getting a description of what this looks like, which is not always the same. And in some children, they've tested positive for COVID-19, but other children have not. So we don't know if this is associated with COVID-19 or not. So what we've done is, through our clinical network and together with our partners, is put together a case report form. So this is a data collection tool in which clinicians can use to collect standardized information so that we could better understand what this disease looks like, how we could better develop treatments for this. And that's important. So far we understand that it's rare, but we are hearing more and more reports about it because people are on the lookout. So as the Director General has said, and as we've said, that we need clinicians to be on alert for this, to look for it, but also to ensure that we collect standardized information so that we can better describe what this is, and so that we can develop better treatment.
Dr. Maria von Kaikoff of the World Health Organization. The head of the WHO Health Emergencies Program is Dr. Mike Ryan. He says doctors didn't notice the syndrome because it's so rare.
As the number of cases of any particular disease grows to a very large number, you start to potentially notice much rarer syndromes. So you may not notice the disease emerge in a small group of 10 or 20,000 cases. But if you get to 90 or 100 or a million cases, then what is a very rare potential side effect or consequence of the infection can become apparent. It doesn't mean that the disease is changing. It doesn't mean that the disease is changing in kids. What it means is, when you get a very large number of children with the disease, you will see a very rare occurrence happen. And in the small number of children, you don't get a chance to see that. So it's very important to reassure parents out there that this does not represent a difference in the way this disease causes disease in children or a difference in severity or a change in the way the virus is behaving per se. What it most likely represents is a rare syndrome that may be associated with COVID-19 that we can observe when we have so many cases around the world. And I think that's important. It's very important we pursue it. It's very important we understand it. But it's also very important that parents and children understand that that this is not reflecting a fundamental change in the way this virus infects children. Also, I did mention in a previous presser, this is a new disease. When new diseases cross the species barrier, they very often don't have what we would call a primary target organ. They very often can infect, and we see this respiratory syndrome, which we can recognize, people short of breath with pneumonia. We've also observed cardiovascular type syndromes. In other words, effects on the heart, effects on the blood system. We've seen effects on the brain and on the neurologic system and reports of those diseases in older people as well. So, and what we don't know yet is whether those rare things that happen are associated directly with the virus and the virus directly attacking the cells in those organs, or are we seeing also the result of the immune response to the virus. And in many emerging diseases, we see both happen. The virus itself can cause damage, and sometimes the immune response to the virus itself can cause damage. That's very much what happens in Ebola virus. Many people, for example, the bleeding associated people see or have seen on the TV associated with the Ebola infection, it's not the virus that causes the bleeding. It's very often the immune response to the presence of the virus that depletes the capacity of the blood to clot. So when a person bleeds, then the bleeding continues. So again, we need to sort out, number one, as Maria said, to what extent is COVID-19 associated with this rare syndrome? To what extent is this a direct effect of the virus? To what extent this may be related to the immune response to the virus? And what's causing what? And it's really important that we understand that, because that's the way we can develop countermeasures and therapies to reduce the impact of this disease, especially in kids.
That's Mike Ryan, the head of the WHO Health Emergencies Program. New York City officials say doctors should be called if children have symptoms, including persistent fever, very red eyes, swollen limbs, rashes, abdominal pain, vomiting, or diarrhea. And you're listening to the news on WBAI New York. I'm Paul DiRienzo. The Senate on Wednesday approved more legal protections for some individuals targeted by a shadowy surveillance court. The 77-19 vote adds language to a House-passed bill, marking a victory for privacy advocates who have raised red flags about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA court, for years. But it also adds a snag to getting the bill to Trump's desk, because senators voted to amend the House bill. Once it's passed by the Senate, which is expected to happen on Thursday, it will have to be sent back to the House to be passed for a second time. FISA was considered a reform when it was passed in the late 1970s to address illegal domestic spying against anti-Vietnam War protesters and civil rights activists by the administration of President Richard Nixon, including an illegal program targeting activists known as COINTELPRO. Demand Progress is an organization chartered to protect democracy on the Internet. Policy Counsel Sean Vitka says today's events in the Senate are a victory for privacy if the House follows through.
What just happened was the Senate had a chance to stop Bill Barr and Donald Trump from accessing Internet activity without a warrant, specifically Internet browsing and search history. So anything you search for in Google, any website you go to. The Senate actually rejected that by one vote. We had 59, which somehow is a fail in the Senate. But what it proved was that we actually have a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate when we have all 100 senators. We had two supporting senators who were not present, unfortunately, and the Senate hasn't passed any remote voting procedures. So instead, this is heading back to the House. There was a good amendment that was added to this. So it actually means the House has to pass this again, and that puts in it an unbelievably opportune decision directly at the feet of Speaker Pelosi. She can add this amendment, which we can now prove sails through the Senate on her own. At a minimum, she can allow the House to vote on it, which is pretty much the only thing that she should do, even if she doesn't support the policy, frankly. The members of the House should have a chance to inform this underlying bill.
Do we know how many people have been caught up in FISA investigations who had absolutely no connection except they were on somebody's quick dial to any sort of international spying or terrorism or anything like that?
The best answer we have on that specific question from the government is that it is an uncountable number. Currently, the Patriot Act, the parts of it that need to be renewed, is expired. So this is actually a revival of those authorities. And there's one of them, Section 215 of the USA Patriot Act, which is specifically prone to abuse. The very first thing that Edward Snowden revealed was that the government was secretly convincing the FISA court to order Verizon and all other major telephone providers to give them every record of every customer prospectively every 90 days. It was an outrageous interpretation of law. It was clearly illegal. The Second Circuit Court of Appeals held that it was illegal. And it was a problem for so many different reasons, but also it was ineffective. It was just this bulk, giant mess that the government has never been able to prove did anything for our national security, and that was clearly not authorized by Congress.
The FISA court's supposed to look at these FISA applications and decide if they are correct or not, and very, very few were ever turned down.
We've known that the FISA court and the FISA process as a whole has been broken for at least 20 years, but honestly, it goes far longer than that. Whether or not it's a good idea at this point is up for debate, but just in March, even after the House passed this bill, so since the House considered this issue, the DOJ Inspector General on the other side of the Carter Page investigation, which did find real problems, by the way, IG Horowitz looked at 29 different FISA applications to see if the issues were showing up elsewhere. In 25 of those cases, he found that there were serious issues, including omissions of facts, incorrect statements, unsupported facts. And in 4 of the applications, they didn't even have what they call a Woods file, which is where they're supposed to substantiate all the facts they make, all the claims they make to the FISA court. In all 29 of the cases that Inspector General Horowitz looked at, we saw problems similar to the ones we saw in the Carter Page investigation.
So does that give President Trump an argument?
If you let the FBI do their job sloppily, you end up with things like the Carter Page investigation. In that case, there is not evidence that it was politically motivated. There's not evidence that it should never started. We're not making any of those claims. But by the time that case reaches Carter Page or Donald Trump, we need to be able to rely on what the government's done. We need to be able to rely on the work that they've done. What are we going to do if the FBI catches Trump in an actually impeachable offense? But by the time it ends up in court, some lawyer down the line lied, right? Foundationally changing the landscape. You can't get a conviction on that. It's like Guantanamo. You torture people. You can't bring that evidence against them in court. If you have a lawyer in the FBI, like in Carter Page, lying about what happened, this is one of the issues in the Carter Page application. We need rules that stop that from happening, or we can't rely on the process at all. Trump cares about people who spy on him. Demand Progress cares about everybody else the government spies on.
FISA arose out of the excesses of the Nixon administration and what was discovered in congressional hearings about domestic spying and Contalpro and things like that. It's all these years later, it turned out to be not such a good idea, or it's just not properly used.
Congress just needs to stop blowing holes in our privacy rights. I mean, that's it. FISA, as it was designed to solve real problems, and it had some real solutions to those problems. But the Patriot Act just blew holes in those protections. There's no congressional decision that the government should be able to use the Patriot Act to surveil our online activity. Does Speaker Pelosi think that that law should, without congressional consideration, be used to spy on our online activity?
Sean Vitka is policy counsel for Demand Progress. A secret court, the FISA court, was empowered to decide on warrantless national security wiretaps aimed at non-citizens involved in telephone conversations with Americans who were not under investigation themselves. After the World Trade Center attack, Congress passed the Patriot Act that eliminated the FISA protections and allowed national security wiretaps to be used to gather evidence on Americans, even if the alleged crime did not involve national security. With the emergence of the Internet and the revelations by Edward Snowden of massive government spying on the Internet, Congress has been asked to rein in the FISA law. And that's some of the news for Friday, May 15, 2020. The news was produced by Linda Perry. Our engineer is Reggie Johnson. For the WBAI News, I'm Paul DiRienzo.